Please listen carefully.
What is communication?
The act of taking a thought from my head and putting it into your head.
Essential behavior of life. We have the both blessing and responsibility of trying to foster
it. It's the strongest way for two people to convey information to each
other. What I have in my head to the outside world.
I think it's the ability to share your innermost feelings and thoughts with
Whatever
others.
Whatever it is that we do to express intent and achieve an impact.
Communication is the ability to express your needs, wants, frustrations, and desires to anyone that you feel needs to have that information.
Welcome to episode 40 of Speech Science. I'm Matt Hott, joined by the man in the airport, Lucas Studer.
Hello, how are you?
Michelle Wintering down in Texas. I got it right this week.
How's it going?
And Michael McLeod, how's it the closest to Boston from all of us?
What up?
Ladies and gentlemen, we have made it to episode 40. We are now in the midlife crisis mode of podcasting where we are hitting our stride. 40 is the new 30, as they say. I've had a crazy week. I've seen Deadpool 2. I've seen Solo. I got a riding lawnmower. I didn't crash on my riding lawnmower. It's been a pretty good week. And also, oh yeah, I still have 2 weeks worth of school-based therapy. Luke Stuber.
Yeah, that was a real roller coaster for me. I was hoping for some sort of lawnmower incident. You know, not deadly, but that would have amused me.
I almost rolled off the hill. Does that count?
I'll take it. That works.
And I cut my mowing time down from a full 90 minutes to 60 minutes. Not sure the mower helped too much, but it did cut a little bit off.
Were you pretending to be Solo while you were driving?
No, I was pretending to be Kyle Busch or Kurt Busch as I was rounding the trees. And if you don't know who that is, he's a NASCAR guy.
Trying to go 30 parsecs.
Were you going clockwise or counterclockwise?
It depended. It was more of a road track, so I had to go left and right around obstacles.
Fair enough.
So let's start with the man in the airport. Luke Stuber, it's been about 3 episodes since we've talked to you last. Are you still alive? How is talking with tech? And why are you in an airport?
What a series of questions. So yes, I am alive. My feet hurt at the moment, but other than that, I'm alive. Talking with tech is doing very, very well. So for those of you who haven't listened, who have an interest in educational technology, augmentative and alternative communication, give it a listen. It's another part of the Speech Science Podcast Network that Matt Hott pioneered for us here. So that's exciting. I actually was just here at ABAI, which is the Applied Behavior Analysis International Convention here in San Diego, trying to figure out what the heck it is that they do around augmentative communication. And the answer is not a whole heck of a lot. So it was informative. I had a great time. I met a lot of wonderful people. I did some great educating. I took some good selfies with folks that thought that I was real amusing for wearing a Talking with Tech t-shirt. And now my flight got canceled. So I have an extra bonus day in San Diego. So if anyone has any ideas of what to do, please do let me know. I don't know the city. Apparently, I'm somewhat near the beach, so that's my plan.
Just sleep on the beach. San Diego, it'll be beautiful. Just sleep there until the morning.
Sounds good.
Michelle Wintering, how have you been down there in the heart of Texas?
West Texas, yes.
Close enough.
Doing well. It's been hot as heck here, 100 degrees and more. So enjoying some sunshine. I need to go find a pool to sit by or something. We have been busy at the clinic, lots of kids and lots of kids wrapping up school. So our hours kind of expand at that point in the summer because a lot of kids want to get during the day sessions instead of evening sessions. And personally, going through baby stuff, because as I told you guys, we're expecting, and that's not so far off. So there you go.
Oh, the little baby speech science will be coming in. You're going to let us name it Speech Science, right?
Sure. Baby speech science.
Baby speech science. Michael McLeod, you don't have any babies popping out of you yet, do you?
No babies popping out. Not at all.
So tell me something else that's been going on for you.
Just had an awesome Memorial Day weekend. Some of my friends came down to Philadelphia. We had a good time. Saw Solo. That was awesome. Based on the Matt Hott recommendations.
There you go.
Yep. Wrapping everything up at the practice. Doing lots of report writing, lots of summaries, a lot of data collection. So things have been real busy.
Oh, good.
Actually, you know what? You gave me a great idea. There are two movies my wife will never see, Solo and Deadpool. And you know what I'm doing by myself in San Diego?
Double
for the next
feature.
2 hours? Hey, I was just thinking. I wonder if someone nearby. All right, carry on. Give me a good idea.
Double feature, dude. That's what I would do. Sorry, Mike. Go back to you.
I'm kind of scared that Lucas is being deported right now.
Do not fight with ICE there, Luke.
He needs to stay. He's a podcast celebrity now.
I could go see El Solo en Español. Well, it's pretty close, right? I have no idea if I said any of that right. Please don't.
I guess I forgot to tell you guys.
Oh, Michelle?
Yeah, sorry. No, I forgot to tell you, what was it, Saturday, I went over to Juarez, Mexico from here.
Ooh.
Actually. Speaking of crossing borders.
What did you do there?
Drank some Mexican Coca-Cola, ate some tacos, and wandered around the mercados.
So nice.
It was fun.
All right, Luke, I looked up San Diego movie theaters for you. Well, I'm going to get back to Mexico in just a
second. Okay, I'm ready.
There is the United Artists Horton Plaza, the Vintage Village Theaters, Digital Gym Cinema, AMC Fashion Valley, AMC Mission Valley, and Ultra Star Mission Valley. So there you go.
Okay, all right. I'll have to look and see how close this is to the hotel or whatever. But yeah, sounds good. I think this is my new plan, so... Next time, expect a score on the Luca-o-meter. Although I got to say, I'm not seeing the best reviews of Solo. I saw the box office was a little weak.
I gave it a 70 out of 100. So
Solo was awesome. I loved it.
So okay, we don't need to all talk about Solo. Let's talk about Speech. But sure, go ahead.
No, it's okay. I wanted to get back to why did you go to Mexico, Michelle?
Why? Because I live in El Paso and it's literally on the border. And why not?
Okay.
Yeah.
Ironically,
so I went with coworkers and friends. A couple of my coworkers are from there. And we crossed over and spent the afternoon in Juarez and ate food and hung out and crossed back.
Ironically, I heard Marty Robinson's El Paso on the radio today. So that's my only key to that.
There you go.
Luke, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was going to say we could meet up in Mexico. You know, Texas and California are pretty close by, right?
They're like right next door to each other, according to my Matt Hott app.
Of course, yes. You guys are.
Yeah, just like how LA and hilarious. San Francisco are right there.
So, Luke, I know you are out there. Will you be able to hang around for a few things with us, or did you got to get to those movies tonight?
You know, I've got to get to the place where this courtesy shuttle is, so I apologize. But my love and my respect to all of you and to those of you listening, I will be back more regularly soon. And pray for me. And listen to Talking with Tech if you get a chance.
I was going to say, who's on this week's episode?
Oh, that is a excellent question that I should know the answer to, and I don't. So check our Facebook. Our most recent episode was a roundtable discussion, which is we try to alternate between just like pure instructional content and then having an interview. But we do have some exciting interviews coming up. We have the team from Sesame Street that came up with their nonverbal character is coming up in a few weeks. We have Carol Zangari joining us from Practically AC. So there's gonna be some good stuff.
Awesome.
It's never, ever more than 45 or 50 minutes. Just going to throw that little jab in there.
Yeah, ours are a 90-minute talk fest. So,
yeah. Well, you know, you people are interesting. We're not. So. Okay.
We just talk a lot.
All right. Thanks for having me, folks. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. All right,
good. Luke.
He's off the line. We can talk about him now.
Yeah, okay.
See, everything. No, there he is. Be safe, buddy. All righty. So coming up on this week's, first, I forgot to give out anything. If you want to go to our, if you want to email us, it's contact@speechscience.org. Give us a phone call, 503-345-6740, or hit us up on Twitter, where it looks like the continuous conversation of Yanni versus Laurel is still permeating through the hashtag speech science. Feel free to dive in onto that. Coming up on today's episode, is there a, quote, homeopathic cure for autism? Probably not. How do you make your summer a little bit easier for your child or student with autism? We'll talk a little bit about that. Parents share concerns over IEPs, and also some research for our patients with ALS. You're listening to Speech Science.
Are you recruiting for a new job? Then head over to our sponsors page, www.speechscience.org/sponsors, and click on ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter enables companies to post to all the major free job boards with a single submission and vet all applicants through simple-to-set-up online question and answer. The Q&A spares hiring managers from reading unqualified candidates' resumes through vetting questions. At the same time, ZipRecruiter lets them easily access huge talent pools, rivaling even the largest paid job sites. This service allows the hiring personnel to quickly explore applicants' answers and resumes online while they collaborate with each other to rate and select the best candidates. Plans can be customized to meet the needs of any individual or company and offers a suite of features designed to make hiring faster, easier, and cheaper. That's ZipRecruiter. Head over to our website, www.speechscience.org/sponsors, and click on the ZipRecruiter page.
This is Dr. Keith Wolgemuth from the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders at Loma Linda University, saying that you're listening to a SpeechScience.org podcast.
Out in the West Texas town of El Paso, I fell in love with a Mexican girl.
Welcome back to Speech Science, episode 40. I'm Matt Hott. Out in El Paso, that's Michelle Winbury. Out in Philly, Michael McLeod.
Thank you, Matt.
Hold it down here in Cincinnati. What'd you say, Michelle?
I appreciate the song. Thank you, Matt.
Hey, if you want to know more about Marty Robbins, you can always check him out on iTunes. But there is a wonderful video with Steve. Oh, what's his name? Plays the guitar or the banjo. Comedian.
I don't know.
Steve Martin. Steve Martin does it with monkeys and Muppets. It is a wonderful little story. He falls in love with... Yeah, so there we go. All right, let's start off this episode with, have you seen this episode, this article out of Penn State? New clues may help improve speech for people with ALS. Basically, they're talking about the size of the space used by each articulator, your tongue, your lip, or your jaw, may impact your intelligibility.
Yeah, a big part of this article really touched on the overall range of motion of the articulators. And that's something that really I notice a lot, you know, in my work, you know, especially within that 3 to 5 range. I'm sure a lot of, you know, our SLP listeners out there could really speak to the overdiagnosis of apraxia or other more severe disorders. But really something that I notice a lot of, you know, with that early intervention age range, is more of an increased rate or a decreased rate, along with that light articulatory contact. So that's that limited range of motion. So really the range of motion of the articulators and the specific contact of the articulators is so connected and is so correlated to overall intelligibility. That's something that really connected with me with this article was that they were really talking about a specific therapy that focuses solely on increasing the range of motion, and that could really help to increase the intelligibility of individuals with dysarthria.
I find it
And then what I was going to add on to that, though, they did mention that with ALS specifically, which in case anybody doesn't know, I'm going to say it wrong, right? But it's amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, and it's a progressive disease. So it's not something that we have a cure for right now. But that they said the tongue range of motion is what's decreased and the lower lip and jaw range of motion is increased. So we're actually, are we discussing with this method or this research increasing tongue range of motion, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Which I find interesting because there is the, you know, the controversy of oral motor exercise, non-speech oral motor exercise. You know, I just did a quick Google and came up with the Gregory Loff article from Asha, which is kind of interesting. It puts that whole idea of which range of motion exercises may or may not be appropriate for our patients, but it does make sense. If you think about, if you just think about where your tongue hits on the alveolar ridge, you've got T, D, S, Z, L, R, N. What else am I missing in that area? The sh sound?
L sometimes.
L sometimes. I mean,
L, yeah.
Oh, Z, yeah, thank you. S and Z. I mean, it's just such a hot button area right there that any little bit can totally decrease intelligibility.
Yeah. And like you said, the non-speech oral motor exercises are kind of an ongoing debate. The EBP, the evidence-based practice, I remember this from grad school because that was what my EBP project was on, was specifically non-speech oral motor exercises, and that they've been shown beneficial for feeding, but not research-based wise beneficial for speech. This seems like a very specific case, and I'm guessing if this is one of the first studies that is showing specifically this sort of range of motion oral motor exercises, specific again for ALS, not for just articulation stuff. I don't know. We got to keep that in mind.
Yeah. When we're talking about dysarthria, which is really, you know, that disorder of muscle weakness, mm-hmm. you know, that overall, that's not truly going to improve or in one of those disorders that you can really recover from, but you can develop those compensatory behaviors and you can find other ways to, you know, I use the verbal prompt to push your sounds out and really, you know, try different things like that. But, you know, in terms of non-speech oral motor exercises, you know, in a way, these are sort of speech exercises because you do need that contact. You do need that movement. So, you know, there is that fine line between non-speech and speech. You know, so much of speech is motion and motion is exercise. So in terms of dysarthria, you are sort of getting that benefit.
It's kind of funny,
right?
How,
and if you're tying that with speech, it makes more sense than if you're just doing a motion to do a motion.
Oh, good point. I feel like it's funny when you think about when you just think about your speech in general, it doesn't seem very tiring or fatiguing. And then when you're sitting across from a patient and you're working on, you know, anything to get them back into intelligibility ranges that are appropriate for ADLs, that you can see your patient fatigue very quickly in front of you doing 2, 3, 4 words or 4-syllable words, that you really get to appreciate how much the articulators are impacted by the vowels around them and just how that light touch or that large touch or how just a mishit can change everything.
Exactly. It's either what you just spoke to, Matt, in terms of them getting fatigued easily, or it's, you know, they perform so well for you, they try so hard for you within the individual session, and then you speak to a teacher, a parent, a peer, whoever, and you find out as soon as they left the session, they went right back to their low intelligibility. So it can be such a frustrating thing from a speech pathologist standpoint. But it's a true disorder of muscle weakness, and it's fatiguing, it's exhausting, and you know to get that appropriate range of motion that you know we all take for granted, it's something that you know it takes a lot of it's energy draining for them.
Now I wonder though, so since this was tested with ALS, and again we're looking at a study of 22 patients, the previous study included 14 people with ALS, and this is also found in the American Journal of Speech Language Pathology, that what can we take for this to move to our other patients? Is this something
extrapolate?
Can we apply any of this to our other patients, or is this really just a muscle weakness dysarthria thing?
It seems like a muscle weakness dysarthria thing, but, you know, I think, you know, any sort of study that's done specifically on dysarthria, and they're using really, you know, the article spoke to using really up-to-date technology. You know, they were using, you know, 3D portable electromagnetic wave systems to really see the movement of the tongue and the movement of the jaw. And, you know, a specific study done on range of motion of each specific articulator is really going to improve therapy for the, for this rare disorder.
And I was fascinated by the whole wave system that they were talking about with this 3D instrument electromagnetic articulograph in order to measure the movements of the tongue and the lip and the jaw and compare them, not just focus on one, but how are they in relation to each other for ALS.
And I will love to see the face on my administrator's, the look on my administrator's face at my home health agency when I ask for one of these 3D machines to take with me to all my patients. This actually reminded me a little bit of a professor that I had at Kent State. Her name was Ann Schmidt, Dr. Schmidt, and she would work with students. And what they would do is they would have a, basically it looked like a mouth retainer. She worked with a local dentist up there or an orthodontist, and they would wear a retainer. And it would have, I want to say it had 50 sensors on it, but I may be way off on that number. But it would light up when a student would hit their tongue on different parts of where the retainer was. So she could give them a visual sign for where their articulators are hitting. There's a lot of things out there that affect it, though.
And she created this?
I think so. She was, I was trying to Google it as I talked to her. That's why I sounded so half into it. Yeah, she would use it and it would show up in real time. And then the students or the adults that were there could really see that when they were trying to say sunshine and it was coming out combine, they could really see like, oh, my tongue should be up here. And she could wear one as well, I believe, and show which articulators needed to be lit up. Or which part of the alveolar ridge had to be lit up?
I saw something kind of like that modeled at a conference I went to probably 5 years ago.
So that what you're talking about was providing like a visual model for them?
Yes, correct.
Okay, yeah, I've heard very similar things with using like ultrasound technology on the side of the mouth for the R. Like kids being able to see on a screen what their tongue is doing for the R sound, but just simply having that visual model compared to the other therapies, you know, progress is that much faster.
And I do have to apologize. It's not Dr. Ann Schmidt. It's Dr. Anna Schmidt. So I don't want her to get mad at me. I want to give credit where credit is due. But
one letter off makes all the difference.
Does for our patients.
That's right.
Oh, all right.
Fair
Let's
point.
Yeah. See how I did that? I brought it all back. We want to hear from you, though. Let us know how you're working with our dysarthria, our intelligibility, both students and adults. Head over to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. From there, you can email us, contact@speechscience.org, or give us a phone call, 503-345-6740. While you're there, make sure you click on the podcast button, either on the Apple, the Android, Stitcher, or Google Play, and give us a rating. We would appreciate that. All right, guys, let's switch gears just a little bit. What homeopathic cures are there for autism?
None.
Yeah, that's pretty much true. There's an article coming out of British Columbia that's located in the northern part of North America up there in Canada. BC's top doctors say there are huge potential harms connected to homeopathic treatment based on the unfounded claim that vaccines cause most causes of autism. What is up with all these homeopathic claims to fixing autism? I saw the ionized foot bath the other day where you put like live electrical wires into the water. Why? What's going on?
What?
Did you hear this?
I missed that one.
Have you seen that?
No. I've not been hearing that.
I've been seeing a lot of things about essential oils. That's been what I've, that's the hot thing on Facebook now.
Yeah, that's true. I have a lot of essential oils. I don't know. Whenever we throw, we've talked about this in previous podcasts, but when you throw out the word cure, it always kind of stresses me out. Because one, with autism, like we've discussed, autism spectrum, saying cure means that there's something, it's a disease and something really right. wrong with them when we want to work with them and meet them where they're at professionally. But then also, Why are we saying cure when there is none? Like, this is so anyways, naturopath. I don't even know what a naturopath is. I read the article and I needed to look that up to see, is that a specific British Columbia licensure as a naturopath?
I thought that was just like a person that like used alternative medication. It was just their like fancy title instead of not real doctor.
Okay.
I don't know.
Here we go. This is just Merriam-Webster Dictionary. A system of treatment of disease that avoids drugs and surgery and emphasizes the use of natural agents such as air, water, herbs, and physical means such as tissue manipulation or electrotherapy. So that's a generic term for naturopathic. Okay. Got it.
So not yeah. real doctor.
Yeah. Curing pathologies with nature. Seems that way.
Yeah. And I have no issue with an out of the box, you know, if something is beneficial to a given patient, fine. But to say that there's a cure for something is, wow. I don't know.
I'm even over.
What did you guys think?
No, this is, I'm about to like anger like half of the 15,000 people listening that when I say, I don't even understand these natural, stupid essential oils. Like, listen, there is no, I have not seen any real scientific proof. I got into an argument with somebody on Facebook in one of the speech therapy groups that there is no research for anything with essential oils that say anything works. And all they could tell me was the FDA does not allow anyone who sells essential oils to say that there is any research. They're like, you have to do your own research. That is not how you win an argument. I'm sorry.
The FDA also doesn't qualify vitamins and everything too. All of that stuff is outside of FDA realm. So right. even when you go buy your over-the-counter vitamins, those are not checked by the FDA. Like,
but I just don't get this essential oil stuff. Like, listen, I get it that like, if you have a student who just loves the smell of lavender and you want to put some lavender in your room and it makes them happy, that's great. That doesn't mean it's a therapy fixer. I enjoy the smell of like burnt tire rubber and cut grass. That doesn't mean that it's going to make me a better therapist because I place some essential oils on a lamp and let it burn into the air to make me. I'm sorry, this is a hot topic issue. I usually try to stay
Matt pretty hot, darn hot
middle.
The hot topic.
The hot take, baby. Matt Hot.
Hot, hot take.
Like I mean,
I think there is something to certain things. There is research on things like peppermint. There's been studies to show that chewing on a peppermint helps people concentrate in an exam or something like that. And right. there also is, I mean, we also have to remember too, the placebo effect is a very real thing. So,
no, and I'm so cool with research.
It's beneficial. It may be beneficial for that person.
And I'm cool with research. I'm cool like when you tell me that chocolate releases extra dopamine into the brain. So if you're studying, it makes you able to retain a little bit more information. I'm cool with that. But when you tell me that essential oils work, but the FDA doesn't allow you to give away any research, I have to call baloney on that. It's all at that point, it's like individual, I don't know. And also just send all your hate mail to contact@speechscience.org. But continue, Mike. You're like being very quiet over there. Are you an essential oil arms dealer over there?
I cannot keep commenting on these vaccine articles. I feel like every week it's a new vaccine article. It's too much, man.
Well, can we touch on a different part of that article where they talked about the CEASE program?
Not the rabid dog saliva where they thought it might help cure autism?
Yeah, that was in there too. But the bulk of the article, right, is saying right. that in British Columbia, the MDs and I'm assuming DOs and medical professionals are saying that these three naturopaths are the subject of a complaint because they have claimed, based on this CEASE, it must stand for something, CEASE, all capital, treatment will claims the, quote, complete elimination of autism spectrum expression. And that based on their claim that 70% of autism is caused by vaccines, 25% by medicines, and 5% by disease. What?
Exactly. And this whole CEASE thing is, it's vaccines, but it's diluted vaccines. So it's basically just diluting the vaccines and giving them over a period of time so that they're not as strong. And they're saying that's going to eliminate the disease. So
what?
There you go.
I can't even anymore, guys. I just...
That's why I was being quiet.
Yeah, that's all right. Like, we've had too many vaccines and autism articles. Is that the gist of this?
Well, yeah. And if you're wondering at home why we do this, this is because that these things keep coming out. And you know, if we don't tell you about it, you know, a parent might bring it to you. And at least you've heard it from our version of our brains to your ears of what's going on. So I looked up this CEASE thing, and it is made by a Dr. Smits. They discovered it over 300 cases over 3 years. Let's see. And in his opinion, it's an accumulation of different causes, and about 70% is due to vaccines, 25% to toxic medication, and 5% to, quote, some diseases.
Also, to be a CEASE therapist, you only go through a 3 to 5 day training. I just
pulled
this up too.
That's enough.
What?
A CEASE therapist. That sounds kind of cool. I'm going to check that out.
This is like that RPM thing where I emailed Soma, the creator of RPM, and asked them if they wanted to defend it over the air. And they said, quote, I'm not here to defend it. Some things will work and other things will not. It's up to the individual user. So there we go.
All right, we might need to move on.
All right, let's move on to something positive. Let's talk about the four ways. This is coming out of the Valley Star, the Valley Morning Star, talking about four ways to make your summer plans a little bit better with children with autism, to make, I shouldn't say better, a little bit easier to transition to. And I can't speak for any of this, so I'll just tell them what they say. And then Mike and Michelle, you guys handle more, I would say, transition stuff, because you see them in private, you see students in private practice versus me when school's out. I say, I'll see you in the fall and hope all my kids come back. So they talk about discussing plans ahead of time, maintaining the schedule, do activities together, and focus only on the positive. Is that what you guys kind of do in your practice when you're helping to transition kids out of school for the year?
Absolutely. Now this was a good article. You know, it was realistic. It gave, you know, actual real world advice, things that families could actually use, something that was, you know, just, you know, giving them ideas of things to do. You know, when, you know, within my practice, as I'm working with these EF kids, you know, a lot of the parents, you have to do a lot of parent training as well, because they're really acting as their kids' frontal lobes, you know, while the, you know, the kids' frontal lobes are being developed and they're delayed and they're being worked on. So you are helping them to, you know, to teach their kids how to organize, how to plan, how to manage time, how to do all these things. And, you know, that's what this article really did to me, was really, it stood out to me as, you know, what can the parents do to help the kids stay busy, get their sensory experiences, have social experiences, and have a, you know, have meaningful experiences throughout their summer when school is out. And that's really what the article did. It was short and sweet, and it gave a lot of really, you know, really good tips on different things to look out for and things to do. And I think it's real important for parents to, you know, plan ahead, maintain a schedule, do things together. And of course, always focus on the positive, because, you know, from there, you're going to have positive and meaningful experiences.
And for my kids, for my patients, one of the big things I've been working on with several of my patients is a calendar, and age appropriate, of course, but introducing some kind of calendar for them. And especially with the transition to summer, and I can think of one of my patients with autism who using a calendar has been really beneficial for him to start talking about things in the past and the present and the future as well. And so having a calendar, having a schedule as a family, and having some big events and small events on that so that the kids can orient themselves time-wise. And it gives you as a family and a parent kind of a basis to go on as well. And then I even encourage parents to put like the question mark activity of like, we have plans, we're figuring out what they are, so that the kids can learn to anticipate a little bit of change and unexpected, but it's still marked on the calendar or on their schedule in some way.
Exactly. And let's look at the main differences between school and summertime. You know, school is very structured. You have your periods, you know what to expect. It's basically the same thing day in and day out. You know, summer, there it's much more unstructured. Each day is so much more unpredictable. And that could really, you know, spell a child's anxiety or, you know, other negative emotions in terms of not knowing what to expect each day or anything like that. So any way that a parent can carry over what the trained professionals are doing at school in terms of using PECs, using a visual schedule, communicating what to expect, focusing on the positive, doing things together. Any way that a school could let parents know, you know, use these PECs, use these little Velcro boards, you know, laminate this or communicate this, use this language, you know, to have that collaboration between school and home to ensure successful carryover, that's going to help the family. And it's going to make things into a smoother transition, not only into summer, but also into the next following grade.
Not really changing topics, but I really liked, I sent you guys this thing from KIII-TV out in South Texas, where the Corpus Christi Airport is kind of doing what you guys were both talking about. It's allowing, it's a program for children with autism who have anxiety about flying, the opportunity to go through the airport and become familiar with all those procedures. How important is it for that real world practice versus just doing it in the therapy session in your clinic?
I love this because you're dealing with the end of the school year. When are people taking, families taking a lot of trips? They might be prepping to go on a flight in June or July or August. And this actually is giving an opportunity. I mean, when else can you go through TSA and go through security and it not be on a flight? We can't even walk someone to the gate anymore. So you can't go through it unless you have a flight. So I thought this was great. I hadn't heard of this before, but I hope other places might do this as well, just to give kids a script. And it would benefit even kids who don't have autism to go through and see what it looks like and not be afraid of it or what's going on or why do I have to go through this metal detector looking thing. You know?
Yeah, this is absolutely fantastic. You know, you're seeing so much more of this nowadays, you know, with movie theaters having, you know, the sensory friendly nights or, you know, amusement parks having, you know, autism friendly nights, things like that.
Chuck E. Cheese does it.
It's great. It's just showing, you know, that the education is out there and the spread of information is actually happening. So that's really a great thing. And myself being out here in Philadelphia, I can speak to like the Philadelphia Eagles and the Phillies. They do a great job with the special needs community in terms of providing accommodations for autism or sensory. So that's, you know, a little shout out to them. But in terms of what you said, Matt, you know, there's only so much you can do within the clinic or the school setting. You know, something like this that truly needs to take place in that specific environment. You can, you know, at the end of the day, it just becomes talk therapy. Like, oh, when you're in the airport, make sure you're thinking this, make sure you script this. And that's truly not going to benefit the kid unless they're there going through the experiences. You know, if you think about it, we had the same things. When we were kids, we didn't know what to expect until we went through it. And for them, it's just heightened because of sensory needs. So when you're seeing people doing this in the community, and you know, taking the time out there to give kids something that they'll need to improve overall quality of life and social experiences, this is huge. So this is something you always love to see.
When I worked at the School for the Deaf and the Blind, I coached the girls' basketball team, and we flew with the boys and girls basketball team cross country. And I'm thinking back to that now. Half of our kids had never flown before. That how nice would it have been for that population too, being deaf students, to be able to go through or walk through that procedure before. We got through it and we figured it out, but I don't know. I think when there's a barrier or something that could make it more challenging, whether it's sensory or language or whatever it is, something like that would be amazing.
Well, I even think about, you know, it's less on the autism spectrum, but sometimes my kids with the with just pragmatic goals. So maybe some of them are on the spectrum. You know, we can only play talking on the phone for so long until they go, okay, I don't want to do this anymore because this is silly. And we end up making the real phone call, and there's a pizza place down here that uses the same script every time. So it's really easy to create the script for them to practice. But to see how they react under a real phone call, it's eye-opening as a therapy setting or as a therapist, because you go, oh my gosh, I didn't expect them to have X, Y, or Z. Or one student I'm thinking of started chit-chatting with the person on the phone about like what car they drove and how they got to work. And I was like, I'm on the other side going, just get to the pizza order. Just get to the pizza order. That's what we do in schools, evidently. I don't do real therapy. I just have them order pizza for lunch.
That's real therapy. That's what it should be. That's real world.
Oh, let us know what you're doing. Podcast.speechscience.org. Hit us up on the email, contact@speechscience.org, or phone call 503-345-6740. The last article talk, this came out of the Federal Way Mirror. I actually don't even know what newspaper that is. Talking about concerns over, there's a pop-up, over IEPs. What concerns are coming up with your area? Then we'll get into the article. What concerns do you guys see in IEPs before we jump into the article?
Well, I can speak to what I experience. Overall, it's just, there's number one, there's, you know, goals that are written that are not truly federally compliant based on the 13 federal guidelines of IDEA. That's a major thing. And there's also a pretty severe lack of collaboration between school, team, and home as well. You know, really taking those parental concerns, you know, to heart and creating goals based on really what the parents want to see happen. So, you know, there's usually that dispute between, you know, the parents not accepting the goals, not thinking they're beneficial, not thinking the school team's doing what they're supposed to do, and the school team not really listening to the parents as much. So having that true collaboration, working as a true team between school and home, really seems to be the foundational issue of what I'm experiencing. I'm sure the problem to that is a lot easier said than done, but that's really what I'm noticing, and it's something that we really need to focus on more, you know, in the future.
For me, I'm not in the schools now. As you guys know, I'm in outpatient pediatrics, but what I'm seeing is, especially this time of year, at the end of the year, when people are looking at IEPs and families are looking at IEPs, wondering if these goals are going to be met by the end of that year cycle, which for some of them pops up at the beginning of the school year, which means after the summer, which makes it a challenge at times if there's a drop off of skill. But one of the things a couple parents have mentioned to me as their outpatient pediatric therapist and then communicating with their school therapist is worry about accommodations that haven't been utilized or haven't been implemented and used as they're supposed to from an IEP. That, you know, something was written into the IEP in September and they're finding out now that that hasn't actually really happened. So that's been a frustration that just happened to come up from a couple parents this past week.
Well, what you guys have talked about is, it's mentioned in the article, very similar. The Federal Way, I just looked it up. It is a city in Washington. So there you go. Anywho's, basically they're talking about things in the IEP not being followed. Caseloads or class sizes too big, fighting between sixth graders and eighth graders. So you got that 2 to 3 year gap. Students not being included. Let's see, not enough therapists, not enough teachers, not enough educational staff. in this, from this article, it all comes back down to their administration and the board. But I think you could put, you could replace Federal Way Washington with almost any city in America, and you're going to have the same issues.
Yeah, this topic really hit on that, on that that topic of inclusion. Really, you know, one thing that the article said was the message being sent to their typically developing peers is that they are inferior, that they are to be ignored, and they are not worthy of basic human rights. So that was a pretty intense language you see there. That was a direct quote from the article, and that's something that I see out here as well. You have the whole thing of reverse mainstream, total inclusion, total exclusion. You know, you don't really know exactly, you know, each kid is very different in terms of what their IEP says and how much they are involved in the general education curriculum. So that's a big topic. You know, obviously the vast majority of parents want their kids to be, to have those positive, typical peer models of, you know, being around the general ed kids and, you know, having the general curriculum and getting the most out of their school day. And, you know, this article really spoke to the kids that are being excluded, that are, you know, not being included with their typically developing peers. So that's definitely a major topic right now for a lot of these kids with IEPs.
I know I've worked with students. I've worked in other districts. I've worked spoke with therapists from other districts. A lot of times it's that the school district doesn't even know. It's not that they don't want to. They just don't know how to even start the inclusion, or at least that's what they're saying. I find it difficult working in the school sometimes when I have a student who I know should be in a more typical class and they're not, or vice versa, that they're in the typical class and they need to be maybe pulled back into something that's a little bit more on their level. Sometimes it's difficult because there's kids that slip through, but this doesn't seem to be talking about those. It seems to be more on the purposely left out, correct?
Yeah, and this article really touched on it candidly. It's in many situations, it's a lack of resources, whether it be specific training or individuals, one-to-ones, or you know whoever it may be to be able to help the individual student. Many of these schools do have a lack of resources to be able to treat each kid at the individual level, which is what the IEP is all about.
Mm-hmm. And what are we doing to help classroom teachers who are not special educators and are, you know, have one or two or maybe four or five, who knows, who are on IEPs in a given class, make sure that those accommodations are met?
Exactly. If we're going to have individualized education plans, which is individualized curriculums in a way, you're going to need resources that can treat each individual. And you know, you can't think of too many public schools that have that.
Now, is this coming back to the idea that we need to look at from a federal level about caseload numbers then? Because if you look at, if we're going to look at individualized plans for students, you know, I'm not just talking about speech therapy, but we're looking at occupational therapy, PTAs, we're looking at in the classroom. If you can tell a teacher they can have 16 kids because it's cross-categorical, or you can tell an SLP they can have 80 because they're all, quote, speech onlys. I mean, you're going to run into that, Kate, you're going to run into that issue almost every time where you've got therapists, you've got teachers that are burning out. Mm-hmm. That when you say, what can you do to go above and beyond to help my student? You've got 80 parents saying that, or 16 parents saying that. There's only, you burn out. Then where do we go from there?
Exactly.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, as soon as a caseload gets that large, burnout is going to happen. Quality of care is going to increase, period. Yep. Yep. We got Mr. Hot raising his hand. Yeah, there you go.
Quality of care is going to decrease.
Decrease. Yes. Did I say increase? I'm sorry. Yeah. Matt increased his hand. So I got confused there.
Yeah, there you go.
So there you go. Nice. So yeah, quality of care is going to decrease, period. I don't care how type A you are. I don't care how many years of training you have. Doesn't matter. If you are overworked, you are not going to be able to treat the individual, period. So this is not only a matter of caseload, but it's a matter of overall the total number of employees, the total number of trained employees, who's working with the kids individually outside of your 40-minute or half-hour speech session. You know, where is the carryover? Where is the training? Where is the time for consultation, collaboration, all of that? You know, it's an overall financial issue.
Well, and I think too often we get stuck on a caseload being 50 kids or 80 kids, and we don't look at, and Matt's nodding his head, like we don't look at how many minutes each one of those kids has per week in the main classroom, in pullout sessions, in speech pathology. And also for a speech pathologist like us, how many of those are you the case manager for, where you're supposed to be running that IEP meeting and making sure that all their teachers, their mainstream teachers who are not special ed teachers, are meeting those accommodations too?
Without giving anything away, and I'm going to tap dance around something, I have started working with a student to get that student a device. And if it was not for the aide who looked at me and said, I want to learn everything you know so I can do this the other 6 hours a day when you're not in the room, the student would never have made any growth. But because of the aide, the student went from using two buttons that were 4x6 buttons, you know, real big buttons, to a field of 15 within 2 weeks.
Wow.
That's fantastic. That's a great story.
The student,
and that is an amazing example of an amazing aide. Like,
and the student, yes, the student's, yes, pretty awesome. And I love the student to death, and I love the family to death. But if it wasn't for the aide who said, okay, tell me what we need to do. And the aide, and I'm trying to be really bland so I don't give anything away, but the student or the aide asked me for some games so the student could learn to use the device better. Asked how we could make it so that they could say, I want something, instead of just saying the food item.
Yeah.
You know, if it wasn't for the aide, the student would have gotten in the 3-4 weeks with me would have gotten about 120, 160 minutes of therapy over a month. And that's not, honestly, that's not a lot. But because of the aide, the student got 6 hours a day of dedicated device time, or almost 6 hours a day.
Yeah, that is awesome, because, you know, it's a shame that, you know, finding someone like that, you know, sometimes can be that needle in the haystack, someone who's eager to learn outside of their typical work hours and somebody who wants to go above and beyond to help the individual. But that's just fantastic. That's a heartwarming story. That's what you'd love to hear, because I don't care what the goals are. I don't care how severe the issues are. If there's no carryover, if there's no work outside of those individual speech sessions, then nothing's going to happen, period. So to have someone that recognizes that and wants to keep working on it outside of the time when you're there, the SLP is there, that's huge.
Yeah, everyone says that I did a good job. I'm like, oh, I just taught the aide to do everything. And, you know, because you're right, it's all about the carryover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, we want to hear from you, of course. Head over to our website, podcast.speechscience.org, or email us, contact@speechscience.org, or give us a phone call, 503-345-6740. And on Twitter, of course, hashtag speech science. And it's, of course, the Yanni Laurel arguments still. I hate that thing. It's still going on. I hate it.
I kind of love it. So I can't.
I used it in a class session this week talking about perceptions. So,
yeah. Hey, I'd love to hear from any of our listeners too. If you've got any feel good stories like Matt's, or any challenges with IEPs, either way. And Matt, thanks for us getting the mics fixed. So I wasn't talking over you like the first section of this.
Yeah, we should have probably put that to the, we should have probably fixed that. All right. When we come back, we're going to wrap this thing up and send it home. You're listening to Speech Science.
I've got to tell you that shopping for scrubs is not one of my favorite things. You want me to tell you why? I go to stores, one store, another store, another store, looking for my size, and guess what? It's not there. Or they have the wrong color, or they only have it in women's sizes. So I got a solution for you. Scrubs and Beyond is on the go with a brand name that's growing fast. Healthcare professionals know and trust Scrubs and Beyond. Scrubs and Beyond offers a new kind of shopping experience for the healthcare professional who is searching for an ever-expanding collection of exclusives and an extensive selection of name-brand medical uniforms and accessories at a great price. price. Scrubs and Beyond is offering free shipping. Wow, I can't believe that. For Speech Science listeners, head over to speechscience.org/sponsors and click on Scrubs and Beyond to begin your order today.
Coming soon to the Speech Science Network, we have a brand new podcast called Talking with Tech, in which we will discover all the different ways that technology can enrich the lives of not only those who experience disabilities, but everyone else that's using technology already. Technology makes things possible for others, and it makes things convenient for us. So let's find out what's possible, and let's find out what's convenient with Talking with Tech, starting in a few weeks here on the Speech Science Network.
Hey guys, I'm sure any of you listening here either have kids, work with kids, were one at one point of time. So you guys know, for art supplies, there's basically only one brand, Crayola. Everything else at this time is second tier. Crayola Online offers a huge range of Crayola brand name items, including crayons, markers, Silly Putty, Color Wonder, Creative Makers, and even Crayola Custom 64 boxes. Crayola's offering a deal for Speech Science listeners. Go to speechscience.org/sponsors, click on the Crayola box. Crayola will give you 10% off your purchase. To start saving, go to speechscience.org/sponsors and get started today.
Welcome back to Speed Science. I'm Matt Hott, joined by Michael McLeod.
What's up?
And Michelle Wintering.
Hello.
Episode 40, we are almost in the books. And Michelle, my question for you, because you're the only one of the three of us that can even have a baby and are currently in the process. Well, I mean, I can't. Michael, can you?
Can I have a baby?
Yeah. Can you give birth to a baby?
No.
Okay. So Michelle, the only one of the three that can and currently is with child.
Okay.
Have you bought all of your diapers? Have you gotten the diapers ready?
All of my diapers?
Well, I mean, have you gotten diapers? Do you have diapers?
I mean, people have bought me diapers.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you have like a binky or like the little thing you put in the mouth, to, like the baby mute button?
People have bought me pacifiers, yes.
Pacifiers.
I call them the baby mute buttons. I love them. Right. Let's see. Do you have a crib?
In a box that will be moved. Yes, because we're moving a month after the baby's born.
Now, do you know the best way to clean the pacifier?
I'm guessing probably not according to this article.
So this is an article out of the Daily Mail, and I'm picking this because it's kind of a feel-good one, makes me feel better as a parent, and actually it's kind of an interesting a link. It says the best way to clean, they call it a dummy, but it's a pacifier, is with your mouth, actually.
Oh, so like a lot of parents do. They just pick it up and...
So if your baby throws their pacifier on the ground because they're playing the pick up everything after me game, they're saying that the best way is to... just clean it by either licking it or putting it through your mouth, because what it does is it allows the baby to be exposed to bugs and germs at a lower risk, which can then help them build immunity. And then also there is a possible link. There's a possible study that it may also decrease leukemia or childhood leukemia.
That is a bold statement.
I'm not thinking. This is coming out of the Institute of Cancer Research in London.
So wow. Well, I mean, it goes with the hygiene hypothesis. I don't know if you guys remember this from if you took childhood psych or any of those like kind of developmental classes that talk about the medical hygiene hypothesis of us overcleaning and using baby wipes on everything has increased the incidences of allergies and... And sickness when people, you know, when kids start school or they move on to college or they do whatever else, if they're used to a much more sanitary environment. So there is a balance between keeping things clean and exposing kids to just environmental allergens and the environment in general.
So there you go. Mike, do you have kids?
I do not.
So I do, and I will be the first to admit that I've done the, oh, you dropped your fork. Let me just put it in my mouth. There you go. It's clean. I don't have time to go get you a new fork.
I put essential oils on my pacifiers.
Oh, thank you, Mike.
Oh, the what is it? The peppermint makes my baby smile. Or what is it? Lavender.
Lavender. Lavender. Lavender does it all.
Oh, all right. We've got a few minutes before Zoom kicks us off. Michael, what's going on with you this week?
Honestly, not too much. Just another one of those pretty, you know, boring wrap-up weeks. You know, nothing really gets too exciting until summertime when there's more social groups and things like that. But one thing I wanted to do, I thought would be nice, was do a little shout out. There's this little Instagram page I've been following recently. It's called Speechy Musings. It's this SLP. I honestly don't even know who it is, but she posts some really great things in terms of SLP self-care and little positive motivational tips all the time. And it's a great follow. I would definitely check it out and see the different things that she says. I think it's really great that she takes the time to post these things.
We need to find out who she is. Bring her on the podcast.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Michelle, what's going on with you?
No trips to Mexico this week. That was just Saturday. Pretty much same as usual, working and seeing my patients. And like I told you guys, getting ready for a baby in a month.
There you go. I've got nothing. I think I might go see some more movies. I've seen 19 movies since January 1st. So I may be slightly addicted. Thank you to MoviePass. There's my shout out. MoviePass. It's like $10 a month. See one movie a day. So there you go.
So did you say what rating Solo got on the hotometer?
Yeah, on the hotometer, I gave Solo a 70 out of 100, which makes it the second best movie I've seen in May.
Wow.
And Deadpool 2 got a 68. So there you go.
What's the number one movie again?
For me, the number one movie, I gave Avengers an 81.
Oh, wow. But okay.
In May, Bad Samaritan, I gave a 74. Bad Samaritan has David Tennant, who is Doctor Who and also in Harry Potter, plays a serial murderer, also known as a serial killer, I guess. Whose home gets broken into by these guys who use the, they take your car like when you go to a restaurant and they punch into your GPS and then rob your home and then bring your car back when you're done with dinner. But they accidentally break into a serial killer's home and things go sour from there. So, all right, let's send this thing home. Our opening music was Please Listen Carefully by Jazar. There is music playing in my ears. There's random autoplay, and you probably can't hear. Opening music, Please Listen Carefully by Jazar. It's licensed under an attribution and share alike license. And our closing music is Calm the F Down by Broke for Free. It's licensed under a Creative Commons attribution license. For Michelle Wintering and Michael McLeod, I'm Matt Hott saying, be a willow, don't be the oak tree, because the oak tree cracks under pressure. The willow will get back to natural shape. I take that from Miss Janice Wright, who seems to be always quoted in these shows. Until next week, we got less than 30 seconds. See you later. Peace.
Bye.
Cool. All right.